Associates Architects team led by Laura Perry. Over the past 12 months, this consulting firm has conducted data analysis, reached out to the community for their viewpoints repeatedly, established a steering committee to ensure the project would work internally and externally within the municipality, held public informational meetings repeatedly, amongst a multitude of other efforts, and developed a dedicated project website, which is out there right now. Anyone can visit anytime they want. Tonight's community meeting is an informational meeting for the consultants to reveal their findings and recommendations. Following the presentation, there will be an opportunity for public comment. Please save your questions and comments for then. For the record, right up front, this is the plan for development. This is a plan for development to attract development for the benefit of the town as a whole. The plan that is intended to create ideas. However, these ideas are for the future, and there are no construction or demolition crews waiting around the corner to begin anything. It's for the future. It does not include removing St. John's Church, nor will there be any opportunities nor will there be any opportunities for the town to take anything through eminent domain. Make that clear, okay? The plan is necessary for funding needs. If you don't have a plan, you're not going to get any funding. The town is not going to fund this. We're going to look for outside funding. You don't get financial help without a plan. At this point, I'd like to turn it over to Dennis Goodyear, our Planning and Land Use Director, for a few comments.
Good evening, and thank you all. I've met some of you before. I am still a new face here in town. I'm having joined the community about, I seem to have, as some people know, trouble with the microphones here. Okay. Is that better?
There you go.
All right. So I'm not going to speak much anyways. There's going to be a lot of talking. So I'm going to be turning it over to Steve and to Laura in a moment. But again, thank you. And I think the mayor has covered all the points that needed to be covered for now. Thank you.
Can you hear me? Okay. Thanks, Dennis, and thanks, Mayor. And I'm Steve Jacobs, and I'm a principal at BJH Advisors. We're an economic development planning and consulting firm. We were selected competitively with our partner, Peary Associates, led by Laura, who I'll let introduce herself. We were selected last spring. I know it feels like 12 months, but we've only been working with the town since end of July last summer. But we've done a lot, and we'll walk you through what we've done. And we're very excited to show our preliminary visions to you. Laura, introduce yourself.
Hi, everyone. I'm Laura Perry from Perry Associates. I have my associate, Matt Spears, here, who's been working with us on the plan as well. We're really excited to be here. We appreciate your time. We appreciate your enthusiasm and your engagement. So we look forward to a robust conversation tonight. So thank you.
So why don't we quickly go to the first slide, and we can just walk you through the agenda. We have like a 40-minute presentation. So we're going to start with where we are in terms of the vision planning process. We're going to talk about planning for the future of Montville. And importantly, Laura's going to tell you what this plan is and what this plan isn't. We're going to go through the project goals, talk a little bit about the takeaways from a market study that we did in the fall that we're currently updating, talk a little bit about our community engagement and what the takeaways have been from our community engagement so far. We're going to look at the investment nodes. Laura will walk you through that. And then we will kind of review, we will review the priority node visions for the three visions, plus the bank paper mill, which is a brownfield site. And then we'll go over our implementation strategy. So next slide. So just in terms of, you probably can't read this because I realize I didn't think that the screen would be so far. But just where we have been, we started our community engagement back in October with a pop-up at the farmers market. We've had a number of engagement with the community. We had a focus group and a meeting with the steering committee at the end of October. We met with the tribal leadership also at the end of October. We had a focus group at the senior center in early November. And then we had a community engagement discovery session at the Fair Oaks Community Center right before Thanksgiving. I don't know how many people here were at that community engagement session. And we had a lot of breakout sessions, and we talked about our preliminary vision back then. We released an online community survey at the beginning of December that was online for 2 months, and actually 3 months through the end of February. There were a lot of push notifications that the town put out. We'll talk a little bit about the takeaways we got from that survey. But the survey and the discovery session in November were really instrumental in framing our vision that we're going to show you today. So, you know, between December and now, we've been visioning the priority sites, and we'll show you that. And here we are in Orange on March 26th at the Community Engagement Town Hall meeting that we're all excited to be at. In early June, we'll be making a final presentation to the Town Council, the Planning and Zoning Commission, and the Steering Committee. And our final report will probably be in mid to late June.
May I add something?
Yes. And Laura,
I'd love to just add, you'll notice in the timeline, there's a lot of dots and a lot of time spent trying to meet different groups of people. We saw students at Fair Oaks. We saw young families with children out at the farmers market because it was the costume night ahead of Halloween. And so we feel really excited about the fact that we've heard from different age groups within the community. And that's really important when we're trying to get a sense of what's in the future and what's looking forward. So these engagement sessions, along with the online survey, were all intended to reach diverse residents of Montville, right?
Yeah. In fact, why don't we, so the next slide, Laura, helpful for Laura to walk us through, you know, what is this plan and what isn't this plan? Because I think there might be some misunderstandings. So
what's true is a plan always implies change, right? And change is hard because it disturbs what we know. It rattles with what we knew in our own history and other things. That's why we spend so much time going into the community. And I'm so delighted that so many of you are here tonight to share your thoughts and ideas, because we know change is hard. So the more we talk about it, the more you understand it, the more we understand your point of view, the better vision we can make that embodies the spirit of the community. And that's our job. Our job isn't to embody the spirit of anywhere else, not anywhere else in Connecticut, anywhere else across the world, but here in Montville. And that's our promise to you, and that's our dedication to you. But with that, I just want to acknowledge that change is hard. And change is scary, and so we understand that, and we appreciate that. So what this plan is, it's a vision. It's forward thinking. So it really presses on our concerns, our fears, our uncertainty about change, but it's a forward vision. And it's meant to create a vibrant place where people can walk, people can interact, can come together in community, in very specific areas of Montville. Because when people come together in community and have coffee shops and burger shops and libraries and places to go see cultural events, people come together and share time together. And we know that people like that. We know from the surveys that you'll hear about that your community is interested in that. So that's really the intent of the vision, is a place-based, Montville-based, vibrant public realm, that means streets, sidewalks, parks, connecting to beautiful natural resources of the Oxo Boxo and the Thames and everything that you have around here, to then drive economic development, drive a diverse and expanding tax base that helps offset the overhead of operating your town. What it's not is uncoordinated and random and haphazard, right? If you don't have a plan, then things happen over time, and they happen as they happen. But with a plan, a vision plan like this, our intent is to have the whole be greater than the sum of the parts in the end. And it takes time, okay? Second thing is, it's a framework to guide implementation. So it's not permit drawings. It's not a demo permit. It's not anything like that. It is a framework that your leadership can return to for funding, for planning decisions, so that the whole ends up being greater than the sum of the parts. Okay? So nothing is shovel ready. There's no developer in the back room waiting to take over your town. There's nothing like that. This is a chance to roll something out to you so you can give your input. Okay? Next, it's long term, and I've implied this, and it's strategic. It's not short term, it's not tactical, it's long term, thinking about the future residents. And then it's working with partners. So all of you have seen everyone who's a resident, everyone who's a parcel and property owner, everyone who contributes to the town is a partner with the town. The town is doing this with you, as the mayor just said. There's no takings, there's no demoing of people's buildings, none of that. But we kind of have to like look at what the possibilities are to have a vision. Then the pieces will come into being. Okay? So with that, I hope that puts some of your mind at rest. You know, we've heard some people were concerned that this is developer and led or something like that. It's not. This is a plan that's led by your town, by your residents, your neighbors, with us interpreting. So you're going to help us reinterpret tonight. Okay? All righty.
Thank you. Next slide. So as we noted, and as the mayor noted, this whole investment plan is being funded by a grant from the state, the Department of Economic and Community Development. It's a community investment fund grant. The request for proposals that we responded to had some very specific goals that we have adhered to throughout the whole development of our plan. And here's some five goals that we want to highlight just to kind of frame our discussion. The first goal was make the corridors, meaning Route 32 and Route 163, make them more inviting. Make them active for everyone. You know, build a sense of place in Montville, not just a place to drive through. Support housing options for working families. This is a huge initiative really across Southeast Connecticut because of Electric Boat. You know, a lot of development has happened in New London and Groton. There hasn't been a lot of new development in Montville. There is not a lot of different types of housing options in Montville. So how can we support more housing for people at different income levels, for young people that want to stay in Montville? Brownfield remediation. So brownfield remediation was also a part of this initiative in terms of promoting the reuse and rehabilitation of brownfield sites along 32 and 163. There aren't that many, but we are going to show you our vision for one of them on Route 163. And then, you know, building lively centers with places to work and live and shop and connect. You know, recognizing the kind of the framework that already exists in Montville, how do you improve? And we'll talk about the nodes that we identified along 32 and 163, because obviously you're not going to spread your investment thin along the corridors. You want to think about where you can get, let's say, you know, the most return on your investment in terms of where you can have the most impact in terms of creating really lively, vibrant centers along these two corridors where people want to be. And then also expanding the trails and the parks and places to enjoy the outdoors. Laura noted the OXO Boxo connections to the Thames. You know, the OXO Boxo basically runs along 163, right past here, right past the town center. And there's a lot of opportunities, which Laura will show you in the visions for the nodes, where you can access these trails and really kind of connect Montville to nature. Next slide. So here are the nodes. We started this back in the fall. We identified 11 nodes. We're calling them nodes. Along 32 and 163, you know, with one being the town center, we kind of moved up to, you know, what we're calling the Cove, and, you know, moving up past St. Bernard's at number 5, and 6 is, you know, the Home Depot. And then we looked at other nodes along 163. We looked at a node on the waterfront, you know, where the town has made investments along the riverfront, you know, just to the east of here. And then we assessed all of these nodes. We, you know, applied metrics to them to think about what are the three nodes that really make the most sense. And I think, you know, anybody that was with us in November, we presented this to you at the Fair Oaks Community Center. But really, the three nodes that we are focusing on for our vision, where you will see the vision later in this presentation, is 1A, the town center, 1B, we're calling the Cove District just to the north, and we're calling it, at first we called them 1 and 2, but we really decided this could be one larger node. You could connect the town center at number 1 to the Cove District at number 3 with bike trails and walking trails, and really think of it as kind of one larger node. And then Palmertown Village, which is number 2, and really thinking of that in terms of leveraging the kind of the historic nature of Palmertown Village. It's much smaller scale than what you could do along 32, but that is the kind of the third node. And then number 7 is the brownfield reuse vision, which we'll talk about, which is right near the water tower, kind of at the, let's call it the western gateway to 163. So we undertook a market analysis in the fall, which we're updating now because we have new data. But I just want to tell you what our key takeaways were, by use. First, residential. We looked at both Montville and we looked at a larger study area that was basically southeastern Connecticut, including New London, including Waterford, including Groton, including Norwich. There's rising regional demand, as we've seen, for multifamily and what we call missing middle housing. A lot of that is multifamily apartment housing for young families, for empty nesters. And this is being driven by the expansion of electric boat and other investments in the area, but definitely electric boat. And we've seen in the last year, and perhaps you've read it in the day, there's a lot of new multifamily development that's happening in New London, it's happening in Groton, it's happening in Waterford. You might have read about the Crystal Mall. So there's also strong absorption that we've seen at Oxo Boxo Lofts here in Montville. So it really shows market readiness for more housing. Retail. There's been a large growth. We can talk about the demographics of Montville. In the last 10 years, Montville has lost, it lost population between the 2010 census and the 2020 census. It's slowly recovering, but it's certainly not at its earlier numbers in the early 20-teens. But when you look at different segments of the population in Montville, the fastest growing segment is the 20 to 34 age range, and also 56 and over. The kind of core, let's call it earning age group, which is 35 to 54, that age group is shrinking. And for some reason, under 25 is also shrinking. But anyway, when you look at the growth in this 20 to 34 population, and you look at commute traffic through Montville, it really supports convenience retail, supports food service, potential to kind of recapture spending that's currently leaking to other nearby communities. And so we see opportunities for neighborhood serving retail, sit-down dining. We heard that a lot, and the market analysis showed it as well, just in terms of the numbers. But we heard this anecdotally from a lot of people we spoke to, that they would like more sit-down dining in Montville, not just fast food. Experiential retail. Experiential retail, you can kind of think of it as like, the trampoline center. You can think of it as an escape room. Those are like very stereotypical experiential retail, but retail that is unique and doesn't compete with what you can already get on Amazon. Because, the retail market is challenged right now because of online shopping. So how do you get people out of their door and, what kind of retail experiences do they want? Along the high visibility nodes is where this retail would go. So arts and culture, certainly community and placemaking bring value, and it can act as a catalyst or an anchor to attract people to an area. Certainly you see that a lot in Connecticut in terms of investing in arts and cultural attractions to bring people, into a specific area, and then they can shop and eat there as well. Office, the office market is challenged, and it's been challenged since COVID. You've probably read about that. There's not a lot of demand for new office. We're not thinking about a lot of new office space along 32 and 163. Where there might be office is like flex office, new medical offices, health and wellness, but the office market is not really strong. Industrial innovation, Montville certainly already has some industrial uses. There is a a lot of demand regionally for logistics centers. That's like what's driving the industrial market. We're not thinking about putting that kind of those kind of uses along 32 and 163. There's other places where those might go, but just in terms of our scope here and our assignment in terms of really invigorating 32 and 163 in placemaking, we don't think that those are the uses that belong along the corridors. Next slide. Just quickly, in terms of housing projections, I'll just go through this really quickly. We projected, and we're going to update this as well, but because of due to electric boats employment growth, there was a demand over the next 5 years for between 1,000 and 1,750 units of new multifamily housing in the region, and the city of Groton did a study and also confirmed that. We were thinking under current conditions, when you think of the larger Southeast Connecticut region, Montville would be positioned, if we're being conservative, to capture maybe 10 to 15% of that growth, that demand, which would be between 100 and 250 units. However, with targeted investments, creating more of a sense of place here, making Montville more a place, particularly where young people might want to be, Montville could conceivably increase that capture rate from 10 to 15% to say, up to 25 to 30%, which would mean like over the next 5 years, you could see, 400 to 500 new units over 5 years, but with investments in placemaking. So that was our housing projections in the market study. We also looked at a retail gap on the next slide, and I kind of already covered this, but there's certainly, when you just look at the numbers, there's significant retail deficits across nearly all categories of retail when you compare Montville to the similar communities in the Southeast Connecticut region. As I noted, the most notable retail gaps are food and beverage and restaurants, general and specialty retail, health and medical services, and also personal services and wellness. Those were some of the gaps that we identified. There's substantial retail leakage, meaning local residents are traveling outside Montville for many routine goods, professional services, dining options, and this is unmet demand that could be met, with an investment plan along 32 and 163. I don't know if people in this room, if that's your experience, if you're traveling a lot outside of Montville for basic goods or for specialty goods. Restaurants, cafes, bars, specialty retail, health and medical services, they stand out, we found, as the largest opportunities for market expansion or new recruitment in coming years. But we're still talking modest commercial. We're not talking big box retail here. And, this would really have to be phased, and it would also be dependent on bringing new residents into Montville. So we're not talking, we're being conservative in terms of, the square footage of retail that we would be thinking in the near term. So why don't I, as we've noted, we've had a lot of community engagement, and Laura and her team have kind of led our community engagement, and I want Laura just to kind of go over some of the takeaways that we have found from the multiple community engagement sessions that we've had.
That's right. So a lot of the market analysis and the data collection that Steve just summarized for you, we went in much more depth, believe it or not. I know we love all the data. But it began to set the table so we could create a context for everyone who participated either in the online survey or in the in-person sessions to help guide decision making. And we worked in tables and small groups. Those of you, there were five or six of you that were there and in Fair Oaks that are here tonight, kind of remember the small breakouts. And I think we did them in the dark, in fact, for those of you who were there.
About
it was
that,
very dramatic.
It was intimate.
It was very intimate. And there were several key takeaways from those sessions as well as the online input. And these takeaways are what we use to sort of guide our decision making, because we're taking all of your ideas and then we have to sort of mix them together with the data, and then we come up with a diagram or a vision for what that might look like in the built environment, right? That's the whole process of this. So the first clear takeaway was that people wanted active public realm. And what does that mean? The public spaces, the parks and the green spaces, they didn't want passive mown lawns that sit there that don't have any activity on them. But they wanted connection to the river, connection to Horton's Cove, connection to the OXO-BOXO, and I know some of you think it does need to be cleaned up, but that's part of this, and understanding where you want to invest your money to take care of some of these resources. Hiking trails, biking trails, connections from the town center to the fishing pier, right? So that we would have outdoor active spaces where people could come together and share in activities together. So that was the number one clear takeaway. The number two clear takeaway, and by the way, these three nodes out of the 11 that Steve pointed out to you were the three clear takeaway nodes from people's preferences of where we focus the investment plan as well. Okay? So in the mixed-use housing, which is creating more housing types than exist right now, what does that mean? So your children growing up, moving out of your house, you want them to work in town, they want to work in town. Where do they live before they've saved up enough money to buy their own house, right? Or where can they live? Where can you live when you're ready to downsize out of your family house into a smaller footprint house? That's what we call missing middle house, right? Housing. Missing middle residences, right? Those smaller footprints, 12 to 1,500 square feet, that are well enough for up-and-coming folks and downsizing folks, right? So a desire for those, and the desire for those were really focused along 32 and around town center in the preferences, right? And then there was a clear preference to see town center, the area around City Hall here, as the focus, or Town Hall, excuse me, here, as the focus, as a town green. There was huge support for creating a town green of a traditional New England type. Okay. In addition to this, and I think Steve mentioned this in the retail analysis, there was a clear preference for places to come together in community. Not only the outdoor recreational type, but the farmers market, pavilions, concerts, places for folks to come together and enjoy the outdoor space, indoor space together. So those were the takeaways. So with that, Right. Oh, right. And then we asked, what's the character? So those were the what uses and types everybody preferred. Then we asked, what's the character of Montville? If parts of Montville might get a little bit more developed, do you see it as a suburban style? Do you see it as an agricultural or rural style? Do you see it as urban? How do you see these nodes developing in terms of character? And the takeaway was that there was a strong preference for these hubs to have a village character. Okay? So that's not big high rises that you would find in a city, right? But it's not rural agricultural spread out on acres of land. It's finding that right balance of 2 to 3 to maybe 4 stories along 32, gabled roofs, feeling like a New England character that's inspired by the architecture that exists here in Montville already. And that scale actually is different in the town center node than it is in Palmertown, and than it is on Route 32 at Hortons Cove. And you'll see this as we show you images going forward. And we tested this with folks with showing them photographs of different types of character, and people circled their favorite. Okay. The last thing we queried is district branding or nodal branding. Like, if you have street lamps and benches and things in the public realm that make the public realm more comfortable to use, what would you prefer? And there was an overwhelming preference for the public realm placemaking elements like benches, lighting, to be a traditional sort of wrought iron New England character. Okay, so hopefully that all feels familiar to you, because that's what the majority of your neighbors said as we've worked through this process.
I'm just curious how many people you took the survey.
Online?
Yeah. It was, well, the survey was, the town sent out, it was, you know, it was on the website, and it was, you know. We were just curious.
Life is busy. We find this happens a lot. We try all kinds of channels to share information. And generally, when something captures your attention as important to you, that's when most people get attached to it. So here we are tonight. Okay, great. So now we're going to go, if I can just catch your attention for just a minute. You're being very patient. We're putting a lot of information in front of you, but we want to give you a context for all of our decision making that we've interpreted from your input. So we're going to go through each node, the town center, what we're calling Horton's Cove, which is just up 32, and then Palmertown Village, and show you kind of before and after and planning, right? Now, I want to repeat what the mayor said. This is a vision. It's grounded in sort of roadway realignment, what is existing, the uses that we found in the market analysis and your input, and all of those things had equal weight. But there will be things on here that is just, you have to get an idea down on a paper before you know if you like it or you don't. Okay, and we know you don't like some of what you've seen because we've already heard that. So that's super clear, so that's great. We want clear information to take away from this tonight so we can make this your plan. Okay? Okay, so the first area we're looking at is the town green. And you can see, if Matt, you can run the cursor, the town hall is in the center. And a lot of times we're not used to looking in plans, but when we're looking at this big future vision, we kind of use this tool. The town hall is right there. We're sitting in the back half of that building right there. Route 32 is the big road that runs up on the right. Route 163 is the upper crossing road. Run that left to right. And then Maple Avenue and Maple Avenue Extension is the other left right. So everybody's oriented, got that? North is up. Okay, so then we have the senior center north of town hall. We have social services in the old town hall building. We have some private parcels up and around on Maple Avenue and Maple Avenue Extension. We have St. John's Church, as we know, on the back side, along with the school and the offices, the old convent offices. And there's a lot of property around that. So our idea here is how can we, and this is a big vision. This is like a big vision. If we could put the biggest vision out there, that would be so exciting and have you think of your town center in a way that you've never thought of it before. That was kind of our charge here, right? But we're going to break some eggs when that happens. So, okay, that's part of our job. So if we took and looked at this, when we said this, and the mayor was very much and supported the idea of a town green, because I think he's been hearing that for years and years as well, right? So this is the first time. If we were to do a town green, how would we do it? And so let's look at the plan, okay? So this is what it looks like. Town hall remains as it is, number one. If you can use it's a little hard to move that mouse. Senior center remains as it is. St. John's Church remains as it is. A few pieces are taken off in this diagram, but there are other diagrams. And I'll just say, keeping the parsonage, keeping the loading buildings behind, all of that works with this plan as well. But in this scheme, we're imagining maybe the back of the school, 8, could become an innovation lab or performance space, a different kind of support space. Maybe it stays a school. It works both ways. You can see the town green on the right-hand side. And in this vision, we imagine that the town green is up and sits high up with the town hall, that the old town hall number 2 could become a branch library, perhaps, of the Montville Town Library that sits down on the green. So we're trying to create a density of cultural and civic functions here that people can recognize and bring together. There's a bandshell at the north end for performances. And the idea is this town green, you can see if you go up 32, where Dot's Cafe building is there, we're suggesting that that building may be removed to create a visual connection to the Oxobotso Brook. This hasn't been discussed. This isn't cast in stone. If it doesn't go away, there's other ways to make this idea come into form. But the way we're thinking about it is to create a plaza that connects over to the Oxobotso Brook, rail trails that could happen there. The Green Line could be a hiking, biking trail that young families could use, that visitors could use, that you all could use. And the idea is to create a visual connection between the town center and the natural resources, because we know from other towns that have done things like this that when you have high-quality natural resources next to your civic and municipal centers and your cultural centers, you get a $7 return for every dollar that's invested, because those are places that people want to be. Okay? All of the retail businesses along 32 across stay the same. We begin to implement some of the town's new landscape requirements for parking so that the roadways aren't just big, open, uncomfortable to walk along places, right? Who wants to walk along 32 right now? Nobody. Our first day we were here, we saw somebody standing on 32 waiting for a bus, and I was just hoping they wouldn't get hit, right? But the whole idea is to take those street corridors and make sidewalks and make tree canopies and have benches so that people can feel safe along those roadway edges. So those principles are included in all of the roadways here. But the most significant change you'll see in this town center is introducing more residential uses in town center. So people who want to live right on the town square and the town green could live close by there. It may not, folks in this room may not want to live there, but a lot of people like to live in this location proximate to cultural and civic functions where they can walk to the coffee shop, they can walk their children across the street, they can walk to church, and so on and so forth. So you'll see along the top edge, along Maple Avenue, some multi-family housing. It all has parking behind, all taken care of, gable roofs. We'll show you some images of that. And then also down along the left-hand side behind the church, townhouses, right? And the idea of townhouses, it's great. They could be owner-occupied. They don't have to be rental, right? So people who are downsizing from their home who still want to own their own property, but they need 1,200 square feet instead of 2,800 or 3,200 square feet. They can move themselves into something that's more appropriate, and they can walk out their front door and meet their friends and go for a walk around the senior center. We also, at the edge of the senior center, number 17, have suggested a community garden or other outdoor community engagement activities. That's the active outdoor space. Okay? So let's go ahead and zoom in to a couple of spots. So here are the reference images that you all preferred that we then built this vision on. So around the town green, it's a large town green that has a walkable edge that feels safe and protected from automobiles. We've incorporated parking along the street for the most part because having cars parked along the street helps sidewalks feel more comfortable and safe. The pavilion or something, as shown in the upper right, at the end of the green, so performances and celebrations could happen on the green where you all can come together as community. And then a community garden on the lower right, something where people can come together and work on vegetable gardens, herb gardens, rose gardens, whatever you would like to do. We find when we've proposed community gardens of quite a large size that everybody wants more, 3 and 4 times more. So you'll be surprised how attractive that is as a way to people to come together and be together, active, doing something. Okay? And here's a few images of the outdoor spaces and what can happen with the Oxobotxo Brook. You see on the upper left, you can see the character. Overwhelmingly, the almost 250 people who responded to the surveys and participated chose this kind of character that has retail on the ground floor and residential above. And this is what we imagined for the Maple Street side. So it still is very much a New England scale. It's a little denser. It's definitely that missing middle. But it's not urban. It's not overwhelming. And I think it will fit really well into the character of the town. And then outside of that, below, you have outdoor seating areas where those restaurants and those activities, whether they're shops, cultural events, places for young people to make things. I'll just say when we were at Fair Oaks, we had young people engaged that night, and they were very excited about maker spaces where they could make music, create their own businesses. They want to stay in town, and they realize for them to stay in town and grow their own families here, they have to have a living. And they wanted innovation spaces where they could make their business, launch their products, and then have a place to be in town. So that's what the ground floor retail could look like spilling out onto sidewalks. And then on the right, you can see what an activated Oxobotxo would look like as we cross the river at the very top of the left screen, a bridge or crossing the top of the dam, and then walking paths along that. At various skill levels, right? Some of them paved, some of them a little bit more rugged. Okay. Realignment of Maple. Yes. If you can go back. When we analyzed Maple Street and the town green and pedestrian safety, the one impediment we saw to the success of that was big trucks having to come down Maple Street all the way to 32. Everyone's shaking their head because they know exactly what I'm talking about. We watched trucks. But your industrial businesses are so critical and such great partners in your town. We have to do something that allows them to run their businesses, but allows pedestrians and residents to be safe around town center. Okay? So our solution for that, if you look way to the left of the left housing area, is to think about how we could connect truck traffic that's coming down Maple Avenue and turn it off onto the 163 before it gets to town center. That will reduce waiting time at those intersections, right? How many people have been stuck behind a truck trying to turn left? And there's eight cars behind, right? We watched it. We saw it. So this may not be the ultimate solution, but this is a diagram for an idea of one critical piece of making this work, is to get those trucks out of the town center. So when y'all are sitting out there in a playground with your grandkids or doing something on the green, your conversation is not drowned out by trucks braking, air brakes, getting down that hill on Maple Avenue. Okay? So that's thank you, Dennis, for reminding me to talk about that, because that's a critical part of that for safety. Like, this has to be safe for it to work. Okay. I think we're on to focus area two, or three, excuse me, 1B. Oh, did we have something there? Oh, yes, up on the upper right is an image of maybe what the townhouses could look like, something in that scale. Two stories, ground level, on the left-hand side behind St. John's. We imagine that area being filled with parks, outdoor recreation, rose garden, playgrounds, lots of public amenity down there for active engagement. Okay? So, let's flip to the end of the deck for just a minute. I want to show before we get off that. There we go. Back a couple. Okay, so just never mind. Yeah, we'll go down. Just go on to the next. We'll just go to 1B. Okay, we'll come back to this. Okay, Cove. You all recognize this as the area just north of the bend. If you're going up 32, you go over the first hill. What's so interesting, what we noticed about Route 32, is the geography creates nodes along the entire length, right? You go over a little hill, you come into a little valley, and there's a retail development. And then you go up around the bend and you go into another little valley and there's another cluster of retail development. You go up the hill and around another bend and then there's another St. Bernard's, right? There's clusters in that make up like pearls on a chain, on a necklace, right, up 32. So we were struck by this kind of spatial character of this first area. And it's really hard to imagine that other than a big parking lot and a road that made me so nervous for the person who was standing there waiting for the bus. Have you guys seen anybody standing there waiting for a bus? It feels very dangerous. Also, what we noticed, look at how close this area is to Horton Cove, an amazing outdoor water and recreational resource, right? So we said, well, what if we thought of this as a slightly more dense area, but we brought housing, residential units into this area too, and then applied some of the planning, good planning practices around parking lots of creating shaded trees, shaded walking paths along the edge, the same principles that we talked about at the town center site. What would that look like if we applied it here? Does everybody know where we are here? Okay. The old McDonald's, if you could use, is right here. The closed McDonald's is there. And way up at the other end, that's the closed Dunkin' Donuts. Okay. Okay. So I'm going to wait and get your attention again. I know this is long. Thank you for being so patient, but you can see there's lots and lots of thought that's gone into this. Okay, next slide. Oh, there we go. Same buildings, taking parcels that are actually already available or were on the market last fall when we started our assessment. So that Dunkin' Donuts parcel is available. The McDonald's parcel is available. There's some other intermediate parcels that could be available. To think about, what if we treated this like a little node, a village? It's a different village character than town center because it's centered on 32, which is a state highway. But we could apply the same sidewalk, trees, benches, lighting, scalar elements to make it comfortable for people. And if people were living here and walking here, how could they cross across the street to go to the stores in the big plaza? Right? Making that safer. Making places for people who are taking the bus to be safe while they're waiting for the bus. So this is the same idea, and there was pretty strong support in all the surveys for this type of development here. One thing we did is we took Pink Row, which you can see down at the bottom here, and rather than taking that through, bent it around and continued it around behind the plaza to Beet Street so that we could use the area along 32 for more residential development. Because it takes a critical mass of space for it to feel like a place, right? Whether this is exactly possible in that way or not, this is an idea. You can work out the technicalities of it later. And you'll also see in the parking lot in front of number one, the commercial, large commercial building, that we've added trees and islands, right, to make that parking lot not a sea of paving, but something that's more human and humane. Okay? So let's zoom in on a couple spots of this. So by and large, these are the reference images that you all preferred for this type of development. You can see on number two, the upper left, that's the same sort of retail on the ground floor, residential units above. In some areas, that retail area could be parking for the residents who live there, could be retail. But you can see nothing gets over four stories. It has gabled roofs, right? But it's a slightly larger scale than we saw around Town Green. But still, when you get to the upper right, the street and where the buildings meet the street and the sidewalk is still very walkable. There's tree canopies. It sits off the road. There's parallel parking on the road. Multimodal paths are integrated into this. And what multimodal paths are places where you can ride bicycles and walk. If you have grandchildren, walk with strollers, right? And still have sidewalks for people to walk. There's enough roadway width to narrow that down so it's not quite like a highway, but it's more like a shared road, we call them. And you can see in the lower right what the parking lots could become if we implemented some landscape in them. Okay? And here's maybe what some connections to Horton's Cove could look like. So at the north end of this, where Beet Street connects back to 32, maybe Pink Row connects to that, that there could be a parking lot that is a drop-off point where you could park your car, you could unload your kayak, or just put your sneakers on and walk out for a walk around trails. Go down and actually see the cove and see the river up close and personal instead of when you're crossing over 2A and you're looking up and down. It's really beautiful looking from there, but imagine if you could walk next to it. So this whole area becomes, you know, presents an idea of an opportunity to really connect everybody to this incredible natural resource of the river that you all have in your town. Lots of towns don't have that. So how can we connect to that? These are the improvements and these placemaking ideas that Steve mentioned that could drive Montville's share of residential units higher than it would currently be if these public realm improvements didn't happen. So that kind of gives you the invitation for your team, your municipal team, to think about where do we invest, right? Where do we invest our resources and the state's resources to create this kind of character in this development? So that's really what this is about. Imagine what we could find, what we could discover, what we could make if we prioritized investment. Okay, so next. And then we saw the opportunity to create a connection for a walkable sidewalk, right? If you wanted to walk from the Cove area, what we're calling just now north of Pink Row, back down to Town Center, you really take your life in your hands, right? because the mountain comes down and there's a little hill on the other side. So we've spent a lot of time at your leadership's urging to think of a way to create multiple ways to walk back and forth between those two connections. So if you lived in the downtown area, could you extend your walk up to Horton's Cove and reach the water if you wanted to? Or if you wanted to take your morning walk up there and grab a cup of coffee or meet your friend somewhere in the other zone, right? So this shows how multimodal paths would come in. And then this is a place where we're just showing you the visual preference, what your preference was for the character of the placemaking elements, traditional wrought iron. And those would be along the sidewalks and the multimodal paths. Okay. Now we go to Palmertown Village. Okay. So this is, really core industrial area, some really vital industrial businesses exist there. A lot of mills over the years, some of them still exist. Mills are great opportunities, as Steve mentioned. You know, the Oxo-Boxo lofts filled right away. It's not even completed, and it was filled. So there's a lot of preference among people to live in sort of renovated factories, right, for housing. So, but we also noticed that the scale and the character of Palmertown Village is very historic. It's delicate. It wants to stay small. It doesn't want to feel like Route 32. It doesn't want to feel like Town Center. It wants to feel like Palmertown Village. So, and I forgot to mention this at the beginning, by the way, these nodes that we developed are meant to be very distinct so that in the future, if any of those other 11, eight other nodes ever want to be developed, you could use the strategies that we're identifying here and apply them in other nodes, right? So we're purposely giving you three different scales of character and scales of development to contemplate how that could translate to other locations. Okay, so with that said, Palmertown Village is the most delicate, it's the most intimate, it's the most tight in terms of roadway setbacks, right? It has historic buildings that sit right on the road, and it has very vital businesses, bakeries and grocery stores that are sitting right there, the post office, right? Sits right there. So what can we imagine here? So here we imagine we want to create a little bit more retail density, so it keeps that little charming village character, but there's places for people to park and places for people to walk to different retail opportunities that might emerge. So here you can see we know that the dark pink number 5 are mixed-use retail on the ground floor with residential above, right? That could be somebody opening a butcher shop below and living in the unit above, right? That's all how our grandparents lived. My kids want to live that way. So what goes around comes around. My son is building his shop, and he's living above it, right? So this kind of retains that very small, delicate character, historic character. And then what it creates in between the businesses that exist on 163 and behind is a little pedestrian-oriented, park your car there, but you can walk there, a little sort of alleyway or small, delicate street between the two. Okay, so it doesn't overwhelm the scale of this area. And then across the street, where we have the larger factory buildings and parcels that are still actively used, parcel number 3 is already being contemplated to be renovated in the same way that Oxo-Boxo lofts have been renovated. And so we took the footprint character there and thought about these other two parcels to the left there and thought, well, if that loft style character is appropriate there, maybe we repeat it and create a series of buildings that feel like old factories, right? What you can see in the green here is a possibility of a trail head that would come down. I was going to talk about this. A walking trail that would come from the water tower and Fair Oaks and things to the west, ultimately, that would maybe connect all the way to the fishing pier, the town pier, right? People could park here. There's extra parking lots proposed here, so you could drop your car with your kids if you're coming from Western Montville. You want to drive here, drop your cars, pop your kids on the bike, and ride to town center. It's not that far of a ride, but it would be really nice and fun to do. There's park space in the center that anchors all of this along the river. And this also suggests that perhaps the dam, as part of the river restoration, might go away here above, but to be determined. Okay, so let's look at the character of this space. So you can see here, these are the images that we shared on the upper left. That's Kent, Connecticut. So if anybody knows Kent, another very similar, delicately scaled historic town center with historically scaled nothing more than two stories. Some picking up on the factory character on the upper right. Access to the water, to the river, and it needs to be cleaned up. Yes, it does, and that's all possible. And then biking and walking trails. You can see some kids in the lower left enjoying that trail, maybe from here all the way out to the fishing pier. Okay? Next. Now we're going a little bit further up the road to the water tower. The water tower's a really wonderful landmark. You know, we were captivated by it and chose it as the logo for all of our materials for this. But we also noticed the paper factory across the way as an opportunity. A lot of that building is so far gone, it's not recoverable. But the center granite building in the middle is probably recoverable or closer to being recoverable. And we saw that as an anchor building that's maybe has a cafe and restrooms that becomes an anchor for an outdoor recreational park here. It could have a skate park at the south end, the very south end. That's a very naturalistic and outdoor skate park. We'll show you some images of that. To a place to enjoy the waterway, to a playground at the north end, and then maybe even in a playful way capturing the water tower or the old tower storage across the way and turning it into a lookout. This is the most fanciful vision. So let's look at some images of that. So you can see here, if we zoom in, the old granite building in the center of the paper mill, a new pedestrian bridge across. Maybe the outside of the tower has a series of stairwells that people can come up and look all the way down the Oxo-Boxo to the Thames. That'd be great, right? Up at eye level with the water tower. Pedestrian bridges, playgrounds, outdoor areas, and then at the southern end, maybe swings instead of benches. Has anyone been to Burlington, Vermont? My favorite part of being along the Lake Champlain is they have swings instead of benches along the water edge. Could we have swings? Could we have access to the water? And here you can see an image. This is an image in the middle on the left of a skate park in Willimantic, just up the road, with trees coming through, very naturalistic. This is all in alignment with what you told us you preferred in terms of imagery of connecting nature to everything that we're doing here. Okay. So, okay. With that.
Oh, I forgot. So, we showed you the vision. Obviously, a vision is only as good as how implementable it is. And so, what are the next steps? So, the first is adopting the vision. And that's really incorporating this plan into the POCD, the Plan of Conservation and Development for Montville. And updating the zoning and design guidelines, and this is something that we've been working on with Dennis, to improve the underlying zoning in each of these nodes. There is an overlay zone in 32, but it's really still not optimal, you know, to accommodate the vision that Laura just showed you at each of the three nodes. Advancing the regulatory foundation would be the zoning and the design guidelines. And then fostering public-private partnerships. So this is not a vision where we see an outlaying of Montville taxes. This is going to take private partners. It's going to take interested property owners. It's going to take outreach to those property owners. As the mayor said in the beginning, this does not involve any eminent domain or takings. This is anybody that we worked with would be a partner. And obviously it's going to take, I mean, there are some low-hanging fruit where the town owns land that can be, you know, leveraged for this vision. But obviously a lot of the vision that you saw involves private property owners that need to be partners in this. And that's going to be an important step. Securing funding. You know, we have identified various state and federal grants from the Department of Economic and Community Development, the state DOT. Dennis has been very active, and you know, part of our implementation plan will be identifying funding opportunities, grant opportunities for, you know, each of the visions. And then other things that we've been looking at is a tax incremental funding district, perhaps like around the town center, which is where taxes, the increased value of the properties in this area, the incremental tax value goes to fund further capital improvements. And many municipalities in Connecticut have done that. And so these are the types of new local policies that we would be looking at. As I noted, you know, we're going to be advancing these over the next couple of months, and we're going to be making a presentation to the Planning and Zoning Commission and the Steering Committee in May or early June, and then the final report will be in June. So I think, is that the... One other thing I want to say is we heard, you know, a lot of you were frustrated that you knew nothing about the survey. So what we'd like to do is we'd like to put the survey live again because, you know, we'd love to hear from you. And so we'll work with the mayor. You know, what we did before was the town sent out push notifications on the town app. And every time push notification went out, we got like 50 responses to the survey that day. So, you know, come to me afterwards and, you know, we'll talk about how we can make the survey, you know, how we can publicize it. Okay, we'll put a link in the town, and you know, but we'd love, you know, we were, you know, definitely we want to hear from everybody. So if you were frustrated that you knew nothing about this survey, we're going to make it live again. So, oh, sorry.
So this, what you've seen here is a plan. It's an idea. It's a vision. And just to give you something to relate to, approximately 20 years ago, there was a study done by the town of Montville that was funded by the town of Montville, $50,000, for public safety. And the thoughts were, we're never going to use that. But we did. We have referred to it over the years for different things. And proof of the pudding is, look at the police station, look at the police department for public safety. We used that Almont study to plan that and to make it go forward. The same thing can happen here because we know this isn't going to happen tomorrow, but it can happen. It can happen with the right funding, and the plan will prove that funding. It will happen with the right cooperation and partnership with everybody around, and we're not taking anything. I also want to point out one thing, that this project is successful. It's becoming successful, and it will be successful. One of the main driving forces behind it was we had an administrator that we were able to grab onto. Much to his wife's dismay, we pulled him away. And he was the administrator that came to us from different planning departments throughout the area, as well as being the planner for CCOG. Jim Butler. Jim did a great job with us coming on board. We do appreciate him being here. And he's going to add to the success of this project. So if you have nothing else?
Open it up.
If anybody wants to say a few words, make a few comments, we ask that you kind of, you know, limit it to a few minutes, okay? So if anybody would like to say anything?
Is this going to be posted, this presentation?
Yes, we will get it on the website. We'll put a link on the homepage.
In the green?
How does this fix the Four Corners traffic problem? This is only going to create a bigger problem for the people who live up the road that can't get out of the road right now because of the traffic situation down there.
Right. Well, one of the... Go ahead. One of the things that we've looked at is a turnabout there.
Oh, good Lord.
No? You talk about eliminating... So if you... And also, if you looked, one of the solutions to eliminating the congestion there is to create that side road for the traffic to get down on 163 when they go into 395. That will eliminate a lot of the problems there. Also, if no turnabout there, a left turn lane.
I agree with you,
and I have talked to DOT about that.
So what's important, as the mayor had mentioned, about having a plan, and if you don't have a plan, you're not going to get something done. So having this, and if it's adopted by the Planning and Zoning Commission, it enables us to pursue funding for various improvements that this shows. One of them would be funding for improvements at the intersection. And if it's not part of your POCD, then you lose the opportunity to get the discretionary funding, whether it's from the federal government or from the state government. So that is something, and we are already actively talking to DOT. They understand that this is a priority for us. I'm having emails almost on a daily basis suddenly, and I think we have some interest, so we'll see where it goes.
I just have a question.
Sure. I'm going to tell you that it's not going anywhere without the cooperation of the property owners. We are not going to take anything. If that becomes a possibility, then we'll talk with the property owners. But
now, property owners
is the church.
Diocese.
Yeah, diocese, yes.
Can you repeat the question when people say it?
Sure. Talking about the property next behind the church. The community center. Yes, sir.
The intersection of 163 and 32 out here.
163 and 32.
But if you go down Maple Avenue, it's a long light. You make the turn, invariably going to stop a block away from the other light. And they do something with the timing of the light.
Yeah, that would be looked at as far as the timing of the signals. And then with the alternative rerouting of Maple, that would take pressure off of that as well. But there is an offset intersection where Maple and Maple Ave Extension are both, and if that could get tweaked, there might be some opportunities. But there needs to be evaluations with traffic timing and the number of turning movements, but that would be something that would be looked at for sure. Yes.
Absolutely.
Which area would be prioritized? Like, which area would you want to do first? If not to Town Green, then would it be, say, Pottertown Village or Route 32? You know, which area would be prioritized?
It would
we can't do it all at once.
Absolutely. You cannot do it all at once, and there's no intentions of doing it all at once. It would have to be prioritized by what developer would make themselves available, show an interest in what area, and it would be taken one at a time.
And property owners willing
property
to
owners cooperation.
Cooperate,
yes.
And are interested in this, because an opportunity for property owners is to realize more value in their property. Right, but when we looked at it, there are more parcels that are on market for sale right now, and then Route 32 location than in other locations. But
Scott,
that's to be determined.
Scott,
Proposition one that you guys put in, I like the fact that you put that number six step road in. Now, would you limit the trucks not coming down Maple Avenue, the second part, so it'd be pedestrians only, or non-commercial vehicles down that road, so it would alleviate all tractor trailers and everything going down to either go to 395 or up 32, correct?
I would imagine it would be signed for local traffic only type, you know, to ensure that the vehicles, and then working with the local businesses to make sure that they know that the people that are coming and going need to use that route.
So state would have to be involved with a new access road going on.
They certainly would be, yes.
Absolutely, yeah. Right.
I like that.
In the green?
Okay, so we know St. John's Church is okay, but Emmaus Building, the school, are you talking about displacing the school children and the school? Is the school going to stay there? Is the Emmaus Building going to stay there? Because you're talking multi-use theater
right.
In that spot.
That will all stay. Except if the church, the diocese, wanted to offer it. So it's not our decision. I mean, we would look for opportunity, but it's not our decision.
And we believe that the plan would be successful without touching the church property, all right, to be honest with you. It was a bold vision that we started talking about, and we thought we would explore it further, and we talked with Father. We've got the message directly tonight from him that came down from the bishop, you know, that you're not touching the church. We get it, and we respect that. So.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Carol.
Hi. I've lived 57 to 59 years here in the town. Love my town. Always will. I got really excited when you started talking about the possibility for some of this housing to be for the 59 and above. However, in all the pictures you showed, it's all multi-level living.
Yeah,
correct.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, based off of what I saw tonight, if we want to downsize from our, we have one level now with basement, if we wanted to downsize, this wouldn't be an opportunity for us, which is a shame, unless you did something, unless you considered
you want to answer that?
One level living.
The beauty of the plan too is that there is flexibility. So the buildings are, has number 10 just on the top side of Maple Avenue. You know, they are not very far off from being with the configurations of like an AHEPA, you may be familiar, or other senior housing that are multi-story. They have elevators and they provide the services that are necessary for people that are aging. So that is a very similar type of configuration. 10, yes. Yeah, so, maybe, and this is where the zoning comes in, and what the zoning commission will need to look at with guidance from staff, providing flexibility. Maybe it isn't a multi-story building. Maybe there's townhomes, or maybe it's a combination of the two. So this is one vision. You can do it, different reiterations in different forms, so.
We've also designed townhomes that are two-family. So the primary owner can live on the ground floor. You can continue to own your equity and own your own assets, right? But you have a rental property as part of it. It's like an in-law suite. Those are diagrams that happen. Nobody wants it. Okay. Well, just throwing things out there. In other words, that is still open, but your comment is well taken, and we'll add an image that shows one story possibility too, right? The buildings aren't designed yet. It's just an idea. It's really important to get everybody's input. And when you get a development partner interested, it's important to have a forum with that development partner so they understand what the town is interested in.
Okay, and on the against the wall.
It seems to me if some of those buildings already meet the demographic you're looking for, people over 50, et cetera, and are two-family, two-residence buildings already, those people should be helped by the town in terms of meeting the architectural specifications maybe they're looking for. Some type of upgrade, I don't know if you could put the gables on there, roofs, that type of thing, for instance. So that if those people don't want to move or sell that, they can stay there. What you don't want is a pink house. I don't know if you're familiar with New London, whatever.
No, we don't want
that. I had some involvement with that in saving the pink house many years ago with the Green Party, and I know all the bad blood that created. You don't want that to happen here in Montclair. Now, change happens. I'm also a biologist. If you don't adapt, you go extinct. It happens to species. It happens to towns as well. So I applaud what you're doing. But you have to have some flexibility.
I mean, and the vision is meant, we've tried to communicate this, that this is flexible. I mean, this is a vision, and it's not a plan. It's a plan, but it's not a development.
It's not shovel ready.
Exactly.
It's not done.
No, I understand that.
Yeah. All the way in the back? Yeah.
I have two comments. One is, thank you for this. Been here for 45 years, and everything you're saying is what we had go by and say almost every day. Gee, they should do this with this. This would be wonderful. I think that's great. Progress is good. We live in progress because you all approved the conservatory property up in Oakdale. It was a great vision by two great men who unfortunately passed away doing these things, and we love it. But I can tell you from experience that we have rebuilt on our property. And so in 35 properties, we took a lot of property on a lake. And we can ski, we don't motorize, but we can ski, we can't shoot animals, we can't do whatever. We have a great existence up there, but nobody does it. Nobody walks on the property, nobody does anything back there for recreation. I'm not sure how many people are going to do it, but I think it's a great idea. My two concerns. This morning in the day paper, we talked about Massapequa finally being developed with almost 1,000 units, and now we're talking about more housing here. That's great. The housing that you're talking about is great. My concern is, what happens when the defense budget gets kicked down the thing? We're going to have a lot of empty units, and we've seen that in other places. I know Governor Lamont wants housing, but let's be realistic about this. I like this. It's small scale. That, I'm not sure. Our schools are already inundated by the casino and the people that moved in with the casino. We've had a really hard transition keeping that up, and the children that are trying to learn, and the influx of people. What about our infrastructure? And with that, one last comment. No one knows how to transition, first of all, on any highway in Connecticut. 32, and as soon as it gets to a non-highway road down here, nobody slows down. It's crazy, and we're having more fatalities on 395 with people so concerned about getting off on the Mohegan Casino exit that they're killing people. And we need to look at the infrastructure, and we're putting our 16-year-olds on the road and saying, would you like to drive now? And then we're petrified to let them drive. That's all over Connecticut. But I'm just talking about Montville. I applaud what you're doing. It's everything that we've talked about in our own family, with each other. I think it would be beautiful. Montville, we all love Montville. All these people live in Montville. We all love it. But I'm just concerned about building too much. I like this amount of building. I don't like that amount of building with it, because we can have a lot of empty places if the defense budget goes away.
Well, and I just want to—I really appreciate your point. I mean, that's why we started, as dry as it might have been, with our market takeaways, and we're updating the market analysis too, because that market analysis was based on data from October, November, and we want to update it before June. But we were relatively conservative. You know, we looked at what the growth is in the region, and yes, electric boat, to your point, is driving a lot of that growth. But you know, we wanted to be conservative and realistic about what percentage of that regional growth could be absorbed in Montville. And we were fairly conservative, and we never imagined 1,000 homes, you know, and certainly not in the short term, not even, you know, across multiple phases. So that's just, you know, in terms of the market analysis that drove this vision. And that's why we started with the market analysis, because we wanted to frame this in a market reality.
Well, electric boats plan for the employment there, the 8,000 or 5,000, whatever number they're talking about, that's just electric boat. Look what's going on up the river at the Mohegan Sun, across the river at the Riverwalk. You know, the employment that's going to be attracted there is going to have a trickle-down effect to a lot of other areas. It's going to create other employment that's going to be lasting, and, you know, nothing's permanent. All the way in the back. You know, the only time there'll be a vote is if there's town funding. And I can tell you that right now, there's no town funding involved here.
Okay, town funding, but there's state or federal funding. Look, we help with our taxes to fund that.
So one of my jobs is to find the funding for projects like here or any other projects in town there might be. So when there's grant monies that are available and awarded, it goes through a process here to the town council. Town council's role is to authorize the applications, and before, when it's awarded, it's their responsibility to accept the funds. So in some respects, I guess, and not to put town councilors on the spot, right? You're voting when you're voting for town councilors, right, for some of that stuff. What I can say is when and if this is going to be adopted as part of the plan of conservation and development, there's a process that would have to go that the Planning and Zoning Commission will have to go through, and that includes a public hearing. So there will be an opportunity to speak if that time comes. There'll be advertisements and notices that are sent that are published to let people know. And at that time, during that adoption stage, you will then have an opportunity to voice your opinion, your thoughts. It isn't a vote like a town vote or a town meeting, but it ultimately is the Planning and Zoning Commission's decision. But they would be weighing in what they hear from the public. No, I don't think it's necessarily for newcomers. I don't think it's necessarily for newcomers. There is a very high density of people that live here now currently. You know, so the improvements also would benefit the people that are here now. Some of the housing, especially if we're talking about it being for senior or people at 55 and up, you know, I'm one of them, you know, that are looking to downsize because their kids are getting ready to move out. You know, with the new housing, it could be people that want to stay in Mottville, that have lived here and love Mottville and want to stay. So it also provides a modern amenity. On the trail side, yes, there might be a trailhead here. You can come and park and get into a trail and go down to the riverfront or go back up to other places. But the intent is that there would be trailheads, just like at the Bank Mill. That would be a trailhead where you could park. And the intent of the trail would also to continue all the way up to the schools and to Camp Oakdale if that becomes a feasibility. So it would connect everybody. So you could live there, you can bike down to the town center if the vision is fully realized.
Sir?
Yes. Well, thank you for your presentation. I don't see 395 on there. So to me, the bypass road is going to be critical to this. You're going to relieve the congestion on 32. It seems to me with the industrial on the left-hand side and your node here, so between the two nodes of Palmer Town and the Town Hall, seems like the Bonneville Drive area would be the area that would be that conduit over to 163 along the highway.
There's a large floodplain between that, for where you reference in 163, and then a lot of wetlands as well. It's a very wide swath. That would not be feasible to cross. Yep.
Thank you. Joe.
Mayor, I got to ask this question. Great presentation. Thank you very much. But if we wanted to pick and choose a node that we wanted to work on, we could do that, right? It doesn't have to be the whole package all at once. We could say node number 5. We'd have to look at that, right, then? So I just want to get that clarified. Everybody understand that? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that would be a whole package.
Right.
You could pick out number 5 of what the people feel. This is an area we really would like to see this program get started.
Well, that could be something answered right on the questionnaire on the website.
Yep. That's a cheap questionnaire, yep. So I'm just telling you. Yeah, I'm done right now.
And that's what in the survey and in our community engagement that we did in November, I mean, the town green seemed to be the area that most people were interested in as a priority. And, you know, I mean, part of what the investment plan also is we recognized very early on, as I said at the beginning, like spreading investment thin across the whole corridor is not the way you want to do this in terms of getting the most impact. You want to think about this incrementally. You want to think where you're going to really get the most impact from your early investments and then how that grows, you know. And so, yes, to answer your question, from the survey and the earlier engagement, the most enthusiasm and preference seems to be for the town hall, the town green, and the town center.
Thank you. Connie.
I'm like many here. I didn't know about it until somebody pointed out a New London Day, which I hope the quote was incorrect when you were quoted as saying were closed up many churches and
do you have a smartphone?
Yes, I do.
Download the app. The mayor loves to sell his app, right? So download the app.
So while everybody's here.
In all seriousness, though, download the app because that's where a lot of the notifications come in, and that is the way that majority of the communications is happening wherever you are now. You know.
So if
we got to rely on that. There's a lot of those folks that don't do that.
Correct.
Don't have that.
No. Let's
call them, notifying them, and telling them this is what it's going to be. What's going to do?
Okay, Bruce.
90% of us seniors don't have your app because I never even knew it was in existence until you told me. The second thing is the 1,000 units. What is happening with that? I read that in the paper twice.
You're talking about a Massapequa side road?
Yes.
That's something that's just been thrown at us. Well, I shouldn't say it's just been thrown at us. We've known about it and been talked about for about a year now, and only recently have they presented any type of proposal. It's a developer. The town is not involved with it other than we're looking at it, but we don't have any real say until they bring it to the Planning and Zoning Commission. It's called North LLC.
All of us North.
All of us North. All of us North LLC.
Because if they're going to put apartments on a riverfront, they are not going to be affordable.
Correct.
I hear you. In the back.
I mean, this is why we did the market study in terms of, you know, where there are retail gaps in Montville. And, you know, we identified that there's leakage in the sense that a lot of Montville residents are traveling outside of Montville to do their shopping. And that shows that there is a demand for retail in Montville. You know, obviously, it's going to be market driven in terms of, you know, who are the developers going to attract? Where, what kind of retail does there need to be? You know, what kind of tenants will come in? But, you know, the market study, you know, identified that there definitely is a gap in very specific kinds of retail in town. But, you know, the goal is, the retail program is relatively modest. And, you know, the goal is not to overbuild retail. Well, if there's a market for it, then you'll see more retail, right? But we started relatively conservative, like in a phase one, you know, recognizing also that bringing more people also brings in more of a demand for retail. So in the first phase, you know, the level of retail that could be supported would probably be relatively modest. But as you add more residents that are looking for more neighborhood-serving retail, particularly in the nodes that we identified and the kind of retail that maybe they could walk to or, you know, a short drive, you know, there'll be demand for more retail. We're not looking for a new Home Depot. We're not looking for new big box in the areas that we identified. but certainly, you know, neighborhood, local scale retail. And like I said, like the more people that, you know, the more residents that come in, the more demand for retail there is.
Exactly. Sure.
In your presentation, you said this would there be no cost to the town.
That's correct. No cost to the town, right.
As you bring in these houses, there are going to be kids coming in, which means they're going to be in the schools. So there's going to be a need for more schooling, more teachers, yeah. Higher taxes to pay for it.
I disagree.
It happens all the time. It's happened since I've been here. When I first moved into my house, I made $2,000 a year in taxes. Right now it's $5,000. We cannot afford to escalate taxes on senior citizens who are retired and young people who are starting their life.
And this plan is to offset that.
Well, first of all, this is taking me out of my comfort zone. I live in my own little shell, my little world. This has created the NIMBY effect, not in my backyard. But some of the proposals, 163, anything done on the river along that, is contamination.
Yep.
There's nothing but contamination. Now, you talked about the trucks, 16-wheelers. They all come mostly from an Indian paper box. That can all be rectified in that end, okay, for your plan. There's no reason they have to go all the way down and be taken care of there. Another thing you brought up, of the water tower and the little fractured across the street, the fractured glass. Back of there, there's a dam. A lot of people don't know it. There's more people that have to.
That was part of the plan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The census property. Talk about cleaning up things. Things could be cleaned up at the dam down here that was taken down. There's a lot of changes here happening. Again, I'm old fashioned. I don't care for them. At least he's progressive enough to doing what he thinks is right for the town. Between us, we have over 150 years living in this town. A lot of changes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Back, right there.
I was concerned with Maple Avenue. I know the congestion, but there seems like there's two parcels of land that they already cleared. And then there's three houses on Maple Avenue. Then with Shop Hill and Maple Avenue, there's no possible land being cleared right now. Is that really the mills parking for truckers or for the employees?
That's
three houses in between. So there's two parcels that's for parking. And I heard the other one with Shop Hill and Maple is clearing now is also for parking. Mm-hmm. And there's three houses in between. Are they going to take those three houses out eventually? And is it going to be parking for trucking or for the employees?
That's all part of the Rand Whitney expansion. That's a $30 million expansion that the town is going to benefit by. The town is going to benefit by. It's a $30 million expansion by Rand Whitney that the town is going to benefit by. And Rand Whitney's always been a good neighbor to the town of Montville.
Drives the prices of those rental units down as well, so there's a balancing effect.
Related to that, and there's a lot of talk in the press about housing these days, and there's a lot of legislation going on mandating affordable housing. There's going to be a lot of changes. The town was fortunate enough to receive a grant from the Department of Housing in the amount of $125,000, no cost to the town, and you know, that is funding a housing growth plan for us. We haven't even started yet. The ink hasn't even been signed on finalizing the paperwork with the state. But you know, we'll be understanding what the affordable housing need is and what the state tells us we have to meet, too. There's going to be some changes going on with that. Related to that, as well as related to how you get this to work, zoning is a very strong tool. And we'll be evaluating how the zoning can be utilized to ensure that development happens in a pattern that is compatible with this and the vision that the town will want. That also includes perhaps requiring set-asides by developers. If they're putting in a 100-unit development, they have to put 10% as being a set-aside affordable, so you can ensure that there's a control on a certain percentage of rents. That is allowed to do, and something that the town, that I'll be presenting to the Planning and Zoning Commission at some point for consideration as well. So there's a lot of things that we can do from a policy standpoint that can make this work, as well as where buildings need to be placed closer to the street, that has very little to no impact on what the outlie is from either the town or the state. So I just wanted to mention that.
So the final vision for all this is due like in June to present, or around June, you'd said. So between now and then, is this model going to be adjusted to reflect that nothing's happening with the Catholic Church property?
I think we'll put the survey back, make it available online, continue to get input on it, and then we'll look at what the parameters are. Again, this is a vision, right?
Yes.
Like all the parcels across on number 10s across are all private property now, right? So what's important to know now is none of this can happen without the collaboration and the consent of the parcel owners, and that includes the diocese, right, for the church. So we'll discuss that internally and decide if we want to have several different diagrams for how that could develop over time. It could be phased. In any case, we show the church, the sanctuary building, staying, period. If it ends up being the church, that's great. There are a lot of times when an area is revitalized around the church that the church sort of finds invigorated energy at the same time. So church is a wonderful complement to this vision and plan, right? So we prepared several diagrams that show how a phase could work, and that will all be part of the report, right? And so all of this is showing what's possible. It's not showing what's going to be done. And as the mayor said, nothing's going to be done without collaboration and cooperation.
And one thing we like about this is it has the, and you know, you're right. I mean, there can be various variations of this in terms of what happens to the building to the south of the church that's part of the church campus. But here the church becomes more, St. John's Church as it is, becomes part of an enhanced town center with like a direct connection to the town green. In kind of a, like a New England, you know, traditional town center where the church and the civic center are right next to each other with the town green. And so the surroundings around St. John's Church, which wouldn't be going anywhere, become enhanced.
I have another question. So all of this is predicated on here at the town hall up that way. Is anything being considered on that side? 32?
There's nothing in the plan that shows that area, but anything's possible. You don't know if what a property might become available and a developer recognizes what's going on up here and may take advantage of it down there. It's anything's possible. This is just gives ideas.
Yeah. What I could say would be a possibility, and somebody had brought up made a comment about people speeding coming up 32, or you know, and then where it veers off, and you continue to 395, or you come this way. You know, we're showing a streetscape, you know, along the Newtown Green area and at the intersections, but that streetscape can continue in the future down towards the Waterford line as well to help in that street. And the intent of a streetscape is traffic calming instead of, because right now it's very wide open, right? There's parking lots that look like they're part of the road too. So through zoning, through improvements, through street improvements, we're working with DOT and getting them maybe to narrow down the road instead of the striping that they have out there, you know, or other mechanisms too.
Turn it back. Yep.
I understand it's a high-level conceptualization of a plan, and it's pending a lot of collaboration with businesses and people. But what about all of the aspects of it that will affect the town tax money, like the town green, town hall restructuring area, all of that, roadways, other couple people brought up and it hasn't been answered, like schools, EMS, fire, medical, all of these increases that are going to affect our tax base. Where does that money come from?
It'll be offset by the development. By the development, bringing development in, bringing commercial in, bringing additional tax dollars in, you got to start somewhere. You can't say nay, 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 nay. You got to start somewhere.
Number four, which is supposed to be the green. How do you bring that up to the town hall level, or are you going to leave it below the town hall level?
Right. I generalize it's above the road level, but it's behind, but being down below slightly the town hall level. So that's a future design issue. But what's unique about this town green is it won't be at the roadway level, right? Because the roadways tip down as they get close to the river, right? And the 163. So at least the northern end of it will be elevated. There's a historic stone wall there. You know, where you have a diagram of how to navigate that change in elevation from the street to the green. But this is the idea, and that's for a future design and engineering study.
Yes, ma'am.
I have another question. We have the units being built across from Fort Chantop right now. We're going to be having units being built up in the Mohegan area across from St. Bernard's there, and that's probably about 200-something units as well. That's 57, that's 200. And you're going to have another 11 built down here at Cow House. Are these part of this conceptual plan, or is this independent developers?
No, independent developers. And the 200 units,
so
who knows? I mean, that's come and gone. It comes and goes, and one day it's on, one day it's not.
What I will mention is that when Steve's team did the market analysis, they took into consideration everything that's been approved by the Planning and Zoning Commission and that might come online or already on, that hasn't even been built yet or started to be built yet. So that's been already considered. So the numbers that Steve presented tonight are in addition to what's already moving forward. So,
yeah, as in the market said, we tried to, you know, be very diligent in identifying all the building permits and all of the pipeline units. So we
counted. That's 1,800 units. I counted that because we went on the town hall side. Everything's being built. If you give two children per unit, that's a lot of kids and a lot of services.
Interestingly enough, in these scale size units that we're talking about, we've done research. We've done this in other Connecticut rural communities. That this size unit, and this isn't the statistic for Montville, but in other similar communities, it's 0.2 children per unit. You get 1.8 children per unit when you get to a large single family house that has three or four bedrooms. But that's, you know, that's just data, so right? So that data can be developed here as well. But just to ground that, your thoughts and what the reality of those percentages are, they can be discovered, right? They can be calculated, and so you can understand what a school impact will be.
Yes, ma'am.
First, I just want to say thank you very much. This, everything you have put up here is everything I've ever hoped Montville would become. Yeah. I moved here 20 years ago. It's what I feel like we're missing. And I think that all of the concerns that you're talking about for schools here, my kids are no longer in the school, but I've always come to the Board of Ed meetings or the town council meetings and said, if you build it, they will come, right? So I'm not an economist, but everything that our concerns are weighed on are answered in
That's still true.
People don't want to come here and other schools are savage. So we may have to lock in a little bit for our schools to get everybody to want to be here, but that's the cycle. And we will all benefit from it, not just because it's going to be bigger, better, and beautiful, but because our taxes will benefit from it too. So thank you very much for coming to all this and all
that. I agree. Thank you. Rich?
How much experience does the architect and the consultant have in projects like this, either nearby in the state of Connecticut or in other states?
Well, I can speak to my firm and our current collaborations. We're currently collaborating in four other municipalities across the state and have worked in others. So current obligations we're working on right now are in Reading, right? We've worked in Glastonbury, Woodbridge, Norwich, New Haven. Help me out with the other numbers.
Well, you and I worked in Reading.
Right.
Working in Montville,
yeah.
And New Haven.
Yes. So this is what we focus on, what we specialize in, and this is what we do. And we were selected through an open bidding process. I don't know how many submissions you had. We interviewed with many teams, and I think the town found us to be the most qualified team.
In terms of BJH, you know, we're a real estate economic development consulting firm, and we have the contract with the State of New York Department of State. We have done their downtown revitalization economic development plans for multiple towns across upstate New York and Long Island, you know, for the last 7 years. We're also doing work in Massachusetts, and, you know, we do a lot of work in New York City. Obviously, Connecticut is not.
Our combined team is also an on-call service provider for CMDA, the Connecticut Municipal Development Authority, and through that we're contracted in two other towns, Avon and Norwich.
Other than Montville, the thing that I would ask is, what towns, Reading obviously is, in my mind, is similar to Montville, the rural community. What other towns, other than New Haven and larger cities, do you work with?
Glastonbury, Avon, Reading, Woodbridge.
Mm-hmm. Their resume impressed us. I can't quote the number of years that they've been in business, but we selected them because of their. We felt they were qualified. Yes, sir.
The new water park is being developed now, right?
The say again.
Down the old boat ramp.
Fishing pier.
Fishing pier and that whole area.
Fishing pier and the boat launch, yes.
I think when people are asking what should we be doing now, we should be maximizing that and tying into the nodes that you're proposing here.
We agree.
Yeah, agree. That's something that we definitely thought about in terms of connectivity between the town green and the fishing pier.
Because what people want is passive recreational opportunities.
I agree with that too. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, we can print it out and make it available at town hall. I mean, how many pages might it be printed out? We can print it out and make it. The land use office is right over end of the hallway over here, right outside the door. We can start printing some of them out, and maybe come Monday, early next week, we can have some available.
Charlie. It's been on the paper. It's been in the paper. I think the QR code was on the paper too. The whole story.
So there will be a newspaper article in the paper tomorrow, and it may not cover everything because the reporter's not here tonight. He interviewed the mayor and I, so we can't get this information out there for tomorrow. So.
Here on the bank, we're basically doing decent here.
Exactly.
Scott. No, I can't see us doing anything with that wall. I mean, that wall is historic.
Cell phone.
I know. We're not going to do anything with that wall, Scott. Yeah.